It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Yes, and today Senator Jeff Sessions will be on in the hot seat in the Senate. Fighting for the right to be Attorney General of the United States of America. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. The fireworks begins shortly this morning. And it's interesting. I just want to go back in time a little bit because anybody remember when Loretta Lynch was nominated by Barack Obama to be Attorney General? Well, it wasn't that long ago. So when she was the nominee, you might find it interesting to hear what the senators on the left were saying at that time about needing to get through that nominee right away. Let's listen.
I would hope that we'd have a prompt confirmation so we can restore morale and purpose throughout the Justice Department. And it's important the Justice Department have its senior leadership in place without delay.
It has been said to the point where it is a cliche, but nevertheless a true one, that justice delayed is justice denied. The refusal to confirm a leader to head the most important law enforcement agency in the United States is a delay of justice that for many seems to be a denial of justice.
Attorney generals are important because the attorney general leads the department that keeps us safe and secure and protects our rights, from securing the right to vote to combating the violence of organized crime, to bringing terrorists to justice. This position is too important for any kind of political games and for any kind of delay.
And I think this is unacceptable and sets an unfortunate, even dangerous precedent. We should not play political games with the Department of Justice, an executive branch agency with 125,000 employees and a $28 billion departmental budget that's charged with all sorts of different law enforcement functions.
Let's do the right thing and take up this nomination, debate it, and then have senators vote up or down, not maybe, on her nomination. We owe it to Ms. Lynch, the employees of the Justice Department, and the American people to have a newly designated Attorney General in place as the nation's chief law enforcement officer and top defender of Americans' constitutional rights.
The responsibilities of the Attorney General of the United States are too important to have this appointment delayed by partisan bickering.
It's simply irresponsible to hold up a highly qualified nominee for Attorney General because some don't like that she agrees with the very president who nominated her.
What a difference a few years make. That was Patrick Leahy, Tim Kaine, Cory Booker, Chris Kuhn, and Ben Cardin, all so concerned about the rapid appointment of Loretta Lynch, the vote, they just must send it through right away because it's so crucial. Not so much when it's Jeff Sessions. As a matter of fact, Patrick Leahy, who is the minority leader on the Judiciary Committee, he and Senator Sessions have sort of been at odds for a long time. And now, Senator Sessions is known, Jeff Sessions, on the Hill as someone who is kind. In fact, I read a headline, Senator Sessions is too nice to deny the position. But trust me, they are after him with guns blazing, and they're trying to paint him as a racist. They're trying to paint him as a homophobe, you know, that terrible word where you believe that marriage should be between one man and one woman. That's terrible. Jeff Sessions does not favor marijuana usage. Jeff Sessions favors following the law when it comes to the borders. These are terrible things to people on the left. And so Patrick Leahy, there's an interesting article in the Vermont Digger about what's going to be happening. They're projecting. I just should say to you that I have been in that room in the Judiciary Committee when Pat Leahy was the chairman. Ted Kennedy was still living. And all of the many of the other leftist senators that some of the Cory Bookers knew. You have never in your life experienced anything like that. I have never heard grown men they are in such a habit and a routine of lying. It had become so poisonous. I was sitting there when they were absolutely destroying a really fine female judicial nominee. She was a wonderful candidate. Can't remember her name at the time, but I remember the viciousness. It's unbelievable. And truth, they're not bound by the truth. They don't care if it's true or not. They just sit there, and if you can imagine, we all can. We know how tongues wag and slander works, but they are given the import of the Senate. Nobody challenges them, and they just go on and on and on with these wild lying accusations. And by the way, so far with Senator Sessions, they have been lying. One of his colleagues that tanked his ability to be a federal judge lied during testimony, and he later recanted that. They discovered it was a total lie. We find out that this so-called civil rights abuse on voting, where he prosecuted a couple that had falsified absentee ballots. It was a black group of voters who brought the suit against another black couple who was a civil rights activist. And Senator Sessions was the Attorney General of Alabama during that. And he oversaw, you know, the prosecution of the couple that had cheated in the ballot box. And they were found guilty. And so this is the basis upon which they're saying he's a racist. And just this week, the son of that couple that were prosecuted under the leadership of Alabama Attorney General Jeff Sessions has now endorsed Jeff Sessions. He says he has no problem with him, that he was it wasn't a matter of being racist. That's the son of the couple. And I could go on, and we will, because this will be going on all week, and you will hear him being shredded by the likes of Patrick Leahy, who has about as much character as you can put in the head of a needle. So this is interesting, because the Vermont Digger, who is no fan of Jeff Sessions, reported this, and this will give you some perspective. In December 2015, shortly after Donald Trump called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, Vermont U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy rebuffed Trump with a resolution stating that the United States must not bar individuals from entering the United States based on their religion, end quote. Now, keep in mind, I can't get into this right now, but Leahy is a master liar. He's great. He's marvelous. It was not an issue of religion. It was an issue of something much greater. You know that. I'm not going to get sidetracked, but that's the way he does it. That's why he's really a good liar. And so in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing 3 days after Trump's remarks, Leahy urged his colleagues to reject the Republican candidate's proposal, asserting it would run contrary to the fundamental principles on which this nation was founded. And so while Leahy's resolution was voted out of the committee with strong bipartisan support, 16-4, one wonders who the Republicans were who voted for Leahy's resolution. There was one staunch opponent, Republican United States Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. And then it goes on to say, in the last major dust-up between the two senators more than a year ago, Sessions filibustered for more than a half an hour a Leahy resolution to allow Muslims into the United States. He called it a reckless resolution that could have pernicious impacts for decades. Is the national interest to admit the ISIS member equally with the Buddhist? Is it wrong to say that immigration must serve the legitimate interests of America and that others are more likely than those committed to violent ideologies? After all, we can't admit everybody. It is better to admit those that admire America, affirm its constitutional order, than those who would be unhappy, unfulfilled, until their vision for the country more closely parallels their religious vision. Leahy curtly returned fire. It's wrong, he said, clearly upset. It's wrong. So there you get it. You understand. Leahy's going after Senator Sessions today, and if you turn on C-SPAN or any of the networks, probably you'll see a fair smattering of that. Now, Cory Booker, the new senator, let's go back in time. Just this past year, there was an award that he was sharing with Senator Sessions. He said, they worked together, they passed a bill together honoring the 1965 Voting Rights March's foot soldiers with the Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony. And at that time, February 2016, not even quite a year ago, this is what Cory Booker said. This is Cut 5.
So this is truly one of my life's greatest moments. I am humbled to be able to participate here in paying tribute to some of the extraordinary Americans whose footsteps paved the way for me and my generation. I feel blessed and honored to have partnered with Senator Sessions in being the Senate sponsors of this important award.
All right, I'm going to interrupt him because now he's all over the place because he's going to testify against Sessions. A mere 11 months later, now he's suddenly discovered that Senator Sessions is a racist, so Cory Booker is going to do anything he can to bring him down. So that's how this works. I want to read to you, this is interesting to me. I don't want to run out of time here, so that's why I'm talking fast. I hope I'm not talking too fast. My friend Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration Studies, wrote an article this morning, which is really good, on National Review. Let's put this on our Facebook page as a matter of fact. And here's the title. New York Times runs front page ad for Jeff Sessions. Mark says, I didn't think I could be more favorably disposed towards Senator Jeff Sessions' nomination as Attorney General until I read today's front page New York Times profile, published in anticipation of tomorrow's confirmation. Yet, you get the impression the reporters themselves concluded that the left-wing racism smears are BS and just wrote a straight news piece on him. The long article is practically an ad for the confirmed Sessions effort. Pardon the long string of excerpts, but they're good. So let's listen to what the New York Times wrote this morning about Jeff Sessions. A devout Methodist and an Eagle Scout who will soon celebrate a golden wedding anniversary with his college sweetheart. Widely regarded as rigidly honest and inflexible on issues he considers matters of principle. Family lived in a one-story house with no driveway, a small concrete front stoop, and a heating system consisting of a fireplace and space heaters. He learned thriftiness from his parents, who grew up during the Depression. Friends joked that even after he attained the comfortable life of a senator decades later, he refused to replace an aging car or the outdated kitchen countertops at his home in Mobile. After he was elected senator, taking a seat on the same Judiciary Committee that denied him the judgeship, Mr. Sessions seemed to bear no grudge against those who had humiliated him in 1986. Preventing something bad from happening is just as important to him as getting something good done, said Marcus Peacock, a former senior aide. Liberals may chafe at such rigidity, but Mr. Sessions shares their disdain for the philosophy of too big to jail. Normally, I was taught, if they violated the law, you charge them. If they did not violate the law, you did not charge them. This is what justice is about, Mr. Sessions said. You don't put your finger on the scale against the poor person who's trying to make a living. You've got to be prepared to say no, he said in 2011. And if you do, politicians normally come around. You don't have to do it publicly. You just tell them, Mr. President, you cannot do that. Those all from the New York Times article on Jeff Sessions this morning. Is that not amazing? And you're going to hear a lot about what a racist he is. And you're going to hear about how terrible it is to have any kind of contact with anyone who's a racist. But someone sent me a picture this morning. It's a picture of Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, President Clinton with their hands over their hearts. And there's a casket with flowers. And turns out the casket is at the funeral of Senator Robert Byrd. As these men stand with their hands over their heart, he's a former recruiter for the KKK in West Virginia. He fought the Civil Rights Act. And he called blacks race mongrels. By the way, Senator Jeff Sessions, the U.S. attorney in Alabama, prosecuted members of the KKK and desegregated Alabama public schools as the state's AG. That's Senator Jeff Sessions. A friend of mine sent me a prayer this morning, and I'm asking all of you to pray for him this morning. No matter how good he is on his feet, how tough he is, it's hard, boy, when you have these blasts of lies. Who could withstand that? And here's the prayer that I'm going to share with you. Lord, please help Senator Sessions feel your peace and protection as the sun comes up today. Put a hedge of protection around him and his family and staff, and may you make his enemies be exposed as evil and as fools to help Americans see the fight for power happening in this city right now. Help fortify his resolve and help wake up a nation to what's happening while they are so disengaged from Washington. Help this good man against evil tomorrow, and always, God, you know what is needed, and we call on your presence tomorrow and your angels. In the name of your son, Jesus, amen. All right, let's pray for Senator Sessions today as he enters that. Sandy Rios coming back next. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest for North Carolina. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Thank you.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. When Charlotte, North Carolina sought to force businesses to allow men to use women's restrooms, the state legislature passed the bill HB 2 to protect the privacy and safety of women and girls. The left has since brought incredible pressure upon the state for merely upholding a basic tenet of civilized society. With the defeat of Governor McCrory, who courageously defended the law, it looked as if HB 2 would be repealed, yet the state Senate stood strong and upheld the law. As Lieutenant Governor Forrest stated, "No economic, political, or ideological pressure can convince me that what is wrong is right. Those who are pushing this agenda will not stop until their social engineering is accomplished. The only thing stopping them are those of us who continue to stand strong." Unquote. We commend these honorable leaders. May God give us more of them. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Middle school kids in Joplin, Missouri will no longer be allowed to attend a Bible study group. The school district suspended the program after the American Humanist Association complained. They accused the Bible study leaders of bribing kids with donuts, as if there's something wrong with offering youngsters a Krispy Kreme or Bear Claw. They allege preachers have been initiating prayers and reading the Bible with students. Well, that's why they call it a Bible study. Anyway, the American Humanist Association claimed the program violated the Establishment Clause. They accused the school of promoting Christianity and luring kids to Christian meetings with special treats. Good grief, they make it sound like the preachers are prowling around campus in a white van. Hey, kids, want a hot Krispy Kreme donut? Sounds to me like the American Humanist Association is a bunch of godless grouches. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Let me remind you that we are partnering with the Preborn this week. And, you know, their primary mission is to get 4D ultrasounds into pregnancy care centers around the country. And, of course, when girls see those ultrasounds, they don't terminate their babies because they know they're babies. It really is an incredible offering, and it's a credible mission. It's very smart in order to preserve life. And so AFA is partnering with them, and every single cent you send will go directly to this ministry, Preborn. It doesn't go to us, and we are partnering with them. We hope that you will partner with them as well. If you would like to make a donation, go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and be as generous as you possibly can be. And we will tell you, you know, exactly how much you always are generous. You always are. You never fail. It's AFR.net to make your donation. And it's for Preborn, and it's to buy those 4D ultrasounds. All right, well, while we were having Christmas, something pretty dramatic actually was happening in North Carolina, and we haven't covered it yet. We all know that the election of November was big disappointment for Pat McCrory, who was the Republican governor, who really was doing what he could to uphold HB 2, which was that bathroom bill that North Carolina passed that simply said that people should go to the bathroom that comports with their physical, their natural gender. Men should go to a men's room, and women should go to a women's room. And same thing with dressing rooms. And they did that because the Charlotte mayor, who was a gay activist, passed an ordinance that really opened the floodgates to just erasing all the barriers. So there was a battle that ensued. And in the process of that battle, North Carolina took a big financial hit. And Governor McCrory lost his bid to be governor. Well, there's a lot more to the story. And over Christmas, other things developed. And so I wanted to do an update on it. And I've asked one of the lead characters in this very powerful drama. It's Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who by trade is an architect, interestingly enough. He is only the second Republican Lieutenant Governor to be elected in the state of North Carolina. And he serves as president of the North Carolina Senate and serves as a voting member of the State Board of Education and State Board of Community Colleges. And he joins us this morning. Lieutenant Governor Forrest, thanks for joining me.
Sandy, thanks for having me on your show this morning.
And just those three titles I just read for you, all of those so controversial. I mean, you've overseen the Senate during this controversial time. And, of course, the State Board of Education, I'm sure, has been a hotbed for various reasons, not the least of which is the bathroom issue. And the State Board of Community Colleges, same thing. Mm-hmm. So, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, I'm just curious to know, how have you kept your own bearings during this? I mean, it's easier to cave than it is to stay strong, and you've stayed strong.
Well, you know, there you always have your weak moments. You know, Sandy, you're right. I mean, the pressure gets to be intense, and I think there's moments that people get confused, and they're trying to do the right thing. Everybody wants to do the right thing, and they look at these opportunities like they did in North Carolina over the last month and say, is there an opportunity to reset the clock on this thing and get kind of some of the pressure off? You know, I have a phenomenal family, one, and a phenomenal staff behind me who, you know, encourages to stay strong. We pray together. We talk about doing what's right no matter what the consequences are of doing what's right. And I have the saying that you'll never go wrong by doing the right thing. And, you know, we believe that keeping men out of women's rooms and showers and lockers and those types of things is the right thing to do no matter what. And so what happened here in North Carolina over the past few weeks when they were trying to hit this reset button, if you will, is there was really a lot of disingenuousness from the other side where they really didn't want to hit the reset button. What they wanted to do is get rid of House Bill 2 so that they could then go across all the cities in North Carolina and roll out this extreme ordinance allowing men into women's rooms across the state. So it wasn't very genuine, and fortunately, the folks in the House and the Senate in North Carolina stood up and said no.
All right, so, you know, of course, this is the stuff you live and breathe, and, you know, lots of us have some knowledge about what's going on in North Carolina, but not the same intimate knowledge that you have. So let's break it down a little bit, because HBT 2, of course, was the bill that was passed in response to what the Charlotte mayor did. And then, you know, yeah. Lieutenant Governor, it would be really good to quantify a little bit the economic hit that you guys took. I remember PayPal. I believe PayPal pulled out. At least they stopped. I'm not sure exactly if they stopped producing jobs there. There were basketball tournaments. Give us some specifics of what kind of a price North Carolina was paying and the pressure that was being brought to bear not only on you but Pat McCrory, the governor.
I think the PR pressure is the big thing, right? I mean, national media, international media coming against you and hammering day in and day out. And I like to remind everybody, this is a political agenda. This was not an ideological battle. There's some ideology here. Most of it was political. They had their sights on a governor. They had their sights on a general assembly, and they wanted to come and do some damage. And so that's what this was about. You know, I mean, we've never looked to the NCAA and the ACC as this moral bastion of belief out there, you know. So, you know, here's what happened, Sandy. I mean, first of all, let me just backtrack a little bit if I can quickly, and I'll do this quickly. When Charlotte passed their ordinance, it was unlawful. It was illegal. They didn't have the right to do it. It was unconstitutional. We said, no, you can't do that. We said, no, we have to protect bathrooms. They also had an attempt in there for contract law to say you need to now provide job security for the LGBT community, extra special rights, if you will, constitutionally to the LGBT community. We said, no, you don't have the right to do that either. Supreme Court said no to that. Federal government's obviously said no to that as well as most other states. So there's nothing extreme about what HB 2 did. In fact, it provided reasonable accommodation for people that were transgender, if that's what their goal was, to say you need to provide a single stall unisex facility for anybody that in a public facility that has that need. So it provided reasonable accommodation, very similar to what the Americans with Disabilities Act did across this country. So there's nothing extreme about it, but it was a political third rail agenda. And so you asked about the economic impact. You know, PayPal said they're not going to expand by 400 jobs. Deutsche Bank, who said they were going to grow here, said they weren't going to expand, which that was a done deal anyway, and they weren't going to already. The NCAA pulled out some games. The ACC pulled out some games. The liberal far left has predicted that's about a $500 million impact to the state economy. So that's about as extreme as you get. That's less than 0.5% of our GDP for the year. So it's not that extreme after all. North Carolina is still ranked one of the best states in the country for business. Forbes ranked us number 2 in November. CNBC ranked us number 5 best state for business. Site Selection Magazine ranked us number 3 best state for business. I could go on and on. And jobs continue to grow here in North Carolina. It continues to be a great state.
Well, it is a great state, and here's the thing. The background on this, of course, I know you know this well, but we have covered this a lot. This kind of the impetus for this was the president of the United States for having his education department demand that school districts around the country suddenly open up their bathrooms and their changing and gym facilities to all genders. And it's been a battle, you know, that's mm-hmm. broken out all over the country. I think the radical homosexual left, after passing gay marriage, just really decided to go full throttle and ask for everything, mm-hmm. including transgender rights. And so they did. They actually had their way in almost every place that they fought this battle until North Carolina. So you guys stood up.
We're the first state to stand up and say no. You know, we're the first state to fight back against the federal government. I don't think the Obama administration knew what to do. We had the Attorney General of the United States come out and actually compare what we were doing to the having signs, male and female signs, on bathrooms. She compared that to having black and white signs bathrooms to
bizarre.
Civil rights debate. It was unconscionable what she did and the way she posed this argument. It was unbelievable. But that's what they were doing. They were out of control. And so not only did the president come out and say, yes, you need to open up all school bathrooms to whoever feels like whatever they feel like for any given day, he said, we're going to do away with Title IX. That is how extreme he was going, because that is what his efforts would do. He said, you know, for sports teams in college, anybody can play whatever sport they want to.
And you
that's
know,
going to do away with the whole purpose behind Title IX. That is extreme. What we're doing here is certainly not extreme.
You know, because I deal with this stuff all the time, Governor Forrest, right here in D.C. You know, there's a whole bunch of us that have been like truth tellers. We're just unbending because we have to be, because truth does not bend. Reality. What truth is? Truth is what comports with reality. This is not change. And we've talked a great deal. In fact, I spent a whole show last Friday. I'm sure you've heard about this because I know you have a friend who's written about it. Gaslighting, this whole business of creating this false world where you actually then think you're going crazy. And I think that's what the left has done on this whole bathroom issue. It's like we're the crazy ones mm-hmm. because we think men should go to men's rooms and women should go to women. No, we're not the crazy ones, and we're not going to beat you. Have been a real champion in this. And I want, we've not been specific. Let's come back to this. You guys did a special session during December. And as you alluded to, mm-hmm. the left had hoped, they said they wanted to repeal HB2 because, as you said, they planned then to go city by city to pass an ordinance like Charlotte. And if HB2 was out of the way, they could actually do that. But what happened?
Well, what happened was, again, there was this deal on the table by some of the leadership in North Carolina that said, okay, if Charlotte fully repeals their ordinance, then we'll fully repeal ours. We'll go back to square one. Well, before that even got out of the gate, one of the leaders of the gay rights community here in North Carolina was on some national TV program saying, here's our three-part goal. First, we had to get rid of Pat McCrory as governor and get a new governor. Then we had to repeal HB2 as fast as possible, immediately. It's an emergency. And then we're going to go across the state and roll out these ordinances. That was before the session even happened. So the members are like, you're calling us back into special session, hit the reset button, and here we see the game plan that they don't intend to hit the reset button. And so what basically happened is the members in the House and the Senate said, no, we don't stand for that. We believe before that HB2 was a good bill. We actually gained a seat in the Senate in the elections, lost one seat in the House out of 120 seats. The governor certainly lost, and that was an extreme price to pay. But at the same time, there was overwhelming support in North Carolina for what the bill did if you explained it to people. If you went on the street and asked people, is HB2 good for North Carolina, I think that, you know, basically 100% of people are going to say, no, I don't think that's too good. From a public perception standpoint. But if you explain to them what the bill actually did and the common sense of the bill, then just about everybody agrees with it.
Would you agree with this sort of analysis that maybe some on in the Republican side of the aisle were ready to find some wiggle room, some compromise, but because the left pushed so hard and were trying to be so outrageous, it actually backfired? So as I understand, the vote was 32-16. Is that right?
Yeah, it really did backfire. Excuse me. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. It got to the place where, you know, so here, let me just back up, Sandy. This is a big business issue. This is corporate America coming and putting its pressure on North Carolina, because the Human Rights Campaign is putting its pressure on corporate America. There's certainly big business entities that just say, let's just make this thing go away. Everything's going to be fine. That's not the case. You and I both know that that's not the case. As I told members, I said, you get rid of this. You strike this down. They go out. They pass these ordinances. You have a much larger battle on your hands. And then tomorrow, you probably have the largest religious freedom battle in America on your hands if this goes away. So that's really what you're up against here in North Carolina. And thankfully, there's other states now, like Texas, like Kentucky and Missouri and South Carolina, some others who are proposing some common sense legislation on the bathroom side of things, just to say, no, this is really what we stand for. We believe this is right. Men should not be in women's changing facilities and showers.
But I think another point I want to emphasize, that while people were enjoying Christmas, you guys were in special session fighting this battle. I don't mean on Christmas Day, but close to Christmas, when you would have loved to have been with your families. Yeah, you've got to stand, you got to fight, and you fought, and you won. And so HB2 is still the law in North Carolina. Charlotte will have to bow the knee to that, won't they?
Yes, it's still the law. I think that, you know, there's still a court battle going on related to this, or a couple of them, I think. There's going to certainly be a court battle at the federal level. There's probably going to be a Supreme Court decision on this issue as well. But as you would agree with me, we don't turn to the courts and say, well, let the courts decide. A lot of people want to do that. That is not the way America is supposed to work. Courts are not supposed to decide these things. And so legislatively, I think the folks in North Carolina have done the right thing, and they have passed the right kind of law to protect the people of North Carolina. And hopefully it doesn't come down to a court decision where our legislators in America, whether it's state or federal, sit back and sit on their hands and do nothing.
And before I have to say goodbye to you, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, I keep wanting to call you Lieutenant General. Would you like to be a general? I could easily make you one in this 30 minutes here. But on the basis of the election in November, we were all watching Pat McCrory, and we felt, you know, really a tremendous loss and sadness when he lost, and it was a cliffhanger. Went on for a couple of weeks, it seems to me. But some are saying, friends that I trust are saying, that it was won because the left harvested absentee ballots which were cast by same-day registrants, which is actually illegal in North Carolina. What can you say about that in a couple of minutes?
Well, I think, you know, as always when it comes to this election stuff and fraud and things like that, it takes a while to get through all of this. We went through about a month of recounts and looking at the numbers and specific counties and that sort of thing. But what the law did not allow was to look at certain things like the issue that you just mentioned. You couldn't open up these ballots and look at them. I don't know that we'll ever know the truth behind this. The reality of at a broad sense, the situation is we passed voter ID in North Carolina to say that you had to provide your ID to vote in our state. And the federal courts, just a few weeks before our election, struck that down and said, no, basically, anybody that wants to come to North Carolina vote can. All you got to do is walk up to the person and tell them who you are and where you live. And we know that there's extreme fraud that happens in that. It has been for years. And we believe in protecting people's most basic rights in our state. And that's what happened ultimately. That was struck down by a very liberal federal judiciary who allowed our elections to be manipulated in this state. But how much fraud there was, I don't know. And I don't know that we ever will know.
Now, you have a Governor-elect Roy Cooper, who's a good-looking leftist, shall we say? So he's the new governor, but you guys have a super majority. Are you guys going to be, do you think that your body of Republican senators and Congress legislators are going to be able, have been emboldened by this success, by this win, really having the curtains pulled back and seeing kind of the hearts of their opponents? Do you think they'll be emboldened to stand against what he might propose?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they will anyway. We have a good, strong, conservative legislature in North Carolina. I think that certainly the people of North Carolina would like the legislature and the governor to work together to solve the problems of North Carolina and get things moving. And I think that they'll have the appetite to do that. That doesn't mean they're going to move left. It doesn't even, you know, really mean they're going to move left of center, to be honest. So I think that the legislature will stand strong. I think we'll continue to do what we do. You're going to see a lot of vetoes. You're going to see a lot of craziness. Our governor came out immediately and said he wanted to expand Medicaid in North Carolina, which is something we said we weren't going to do because of the cost overruns there, because we were already $1 billion in the hole. And he's doing that by executive order, which he has no authority to do. So
okay, sounds familiar.
These things pop up, and that's where we're going.
All right, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, some are saying the de facto governor right now with the Republican House. So he's got his hands full. And when we see your name in the news, we'll know how to pray for you and to know what you're up against, Lieutenant Governor. I hope we can talk again. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Sandy. Take care. Bye.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Be back.
Right. Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you have partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
What are students saying about Wesley Biblical Seminary? Here's Pastor Gary Adams.
I think one of the most valuable things through Wesley has been maturity in faith and spirituality in community as well. It's very difficult to spend time with the Lord and remain the same.
I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come and be a part of our community.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
We live in a day where we have the greatest evidence of the reliability of the text in the New Testament at the very time there's the greatest skepticism about it.
Information is not all that's needed to prove the authenticity of Scripture. We need understanding as well. Author and apologist Dr. James White offers plenty of both in the AFA Cultural Institute DVD, The Reliability of the New Testament. You'll find this resource and much more when you visit afastore.net.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, President-elect Trump's nominee for Attorney General will have at last an opportunity to respond to the vocal critics who have been defaming him for weeks. It's likely that when the hearings on his appointment are completed, the American people will appreciate about Senator Jeff Sessions what his Senate colleagues have long recognized. The Alabaman is an exceptionally decent, honorable, and dedicated public servant whose character and integrity have made him friends and admirers among his political adversaries. Those qualities will serve the new administration and the nation well in the years ahead, as both are sorely tested by internal and external challenges. Mr. Sessions will provide steady, principled leadership. He will faithfully enforce the law, and as his oath of office requires, he will protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Jeff Sessions will make a great Attorney General. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you, reminding you we are partnering with Preborn, Mission Preborn, who buys these 40 ultrasounds and puts them at pregnancy care centers, donates them. So that women can actually see that what is in within them is this really wonderful little special, like nobody else, baby. It's just theirs. And most women who see this, most of them in huge numbers and percentages, never abort their babies once they see them. If you would like to help purchase some of these machines to give to crisis and care pregnancy centers, you can do that by calling 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can go to AFR.net and make your donation online. That's AFR.net. Well, there's a lot of discussion. Speaking of abortion, of course, Obamacare has been very controversial in so many ways, but one of those ways has been providing abortion coverage. And so that's not what we're going to talk about specifically, but it reminded me of that because I want to talk now about this whole business of defunding and replacing and getting rid of Obamacare. Kellyanne Conway was on last night with Sean Hannity. And, of course, Kellyanne is Trump's one of his trusted advisors, and you've heard me brag and boast about, I think, she is a woman of character. And so when she speaks, I listen. And so I want you to hear what she had to say about what's going on in this regard.
I don't know what he told Senator Paul specifically, but I just know in speaking with the president-elect daily about this issue, how he feels about it. It should be no secret to everyone that he, when he says he'll repeal it and replace it, he means it. He ran on it. He will do it. And I would mention to everyone, Sean, that in 2010, the Republicans won in large part because of their commitment to repeal and replace Obamacare. And two-thirds of the Republican Congress was elected in 2010 or more recently. And why is that important? Because they've all made that promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. And it's important that they happen in quick succession. Here's the other thing. When, you know, a lot of these members of Congress have voted to repeal it, but they've never had an opportunity to replace it because they had the author of Obamacare, President Obama, vetoing those measures. But they need to make good on these promises. You know, Obamacare is the best example that many Americans have of how invasive, intrusive, expensive, and expansive the federal government is in your life. I think it would be a mistake to get rid of the penalties and not get rid of the regulations. Some Republicans are openly talking about that. You really need to gut the most corrosive aspects of Obamacare. And again, pre-existing conditions, very popular. Keeping people on coverage who have it, popular.
But it's not going to look anything Medicaid like Obamacare. Just because I read
nothing.
All right. So that, of course, that was Sean guesting, jumping in with Kellyanne. But the issue is this, and we've talked about it before. I think most Americans would say get rid of Obamacare. The question is why now it has become the mantra to replace it, that we're going to replace it with something better, that we're going to find another plan. And I personally think it seems that somehow in this discussion of health care reform, the Republican Party has hurtled to the left. Since when does the United States government, under the Constitution, since when are we to provide health care for our people? We are not a socialist country. James Wallner is the Heritage Foundation's Group Vice President for Research. James was formerly the Executive Director of the Senate Steering Committee. He is highly regarded in Washington. He oversees the Heritage's Daily Signal, which is a great source of trusted information. I look to it all the time to really trust what is going on. I trust their assessment, and James is probably at the heart of that kind of trust, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know, before we talk about Obamacare, I want to slip another thing in here. Because you are a former executive director of the Senate Steering Committee, I really would just a word from you on what's going to be happening this morning with Jeff Sessions. We've already discussed it here on the show this morning, but I'd like your perspective. What do you think? Do you think they're going to, will there be some manage and control of the lambasting and accusations of him as a racist, or will it be out of control free-for-all? What do you think?
I certainly hope so. I hope it's the former. I had the great honor and privilege of working with Jeff Sessions. He was the first member with whom I worked when I came to the Senate. I was his legislative director for a number of years. I can't think of a man more fitted to the position, a man of higher integrity and honor than Jeff Sessions. I've learned so much from him, and I really just hope this morning that the American people get an opportunity to see and meet the Jeff Sessions that I know and have come to respect over the years, and not the one that the left seems to be intent on putting up in trying to convince people that, that's who he really is, when in reality there's nothing in his record. There is nothing that he has said or done that even remotely comes close to what they're suggesting he is.
Yep, and we've talked about that, and we'll talk about it some more, because by the time people listen this morning, they'll think he's the worst person that ever crossed the globe. I was trying to describe what a serial liar Patrick Leahy and Ted Kennedy were. I remember sitting in the Judiciary Committee hearings when they were grilling Supreme Court nominees, and it was just disgraceful because they are not.
I mean, sorry to interrupt, but I mean, I think one, this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart, and I would just say that as someone who had worked in the Senate for almost or over a decade, someone who worked very closely for and then with Senator Jeff Sessions, these members now who are out there saying a lot of really nasty stuff about him, they had no problem palling around with him on the Senate floor, being friends and colleagues with him, voting with him, partnering with him on certain things. And so it's just it's a little odd to me to all of a sudden see that now that he's in the spotlight, someone whom they were completely fine being friendly with behind closed doors, now he's somehow the worst person they've ever met.
Now, well, so because they are liars, James. I'll say that. You don't have to. I remember sitting in one of those committee hearings, and I was kind of new to Washington. It was when I was president of CWA, and I could not believe my ears, and I could not hardly keep quiet. I was like, I want to go. My decorum was not the best. I wanted to say, you've got to be kidding me. He's lying. I felt like, what's this guy? The guy that you lie, Joe Wilson on the floor when Barack Obama was speaking. But anyway, I controlled myself. I guess that's good. That's a problem. I think maybe sometimes I always think it'd be better if they'd break out in a real fight and actually speak the truth instead of playing all these games. But let's talk about the issue at hand here. We know that Obamacare, my understanding is, it can be actually totally done away with through the process of reconciliation, which is a budget mechanism. And James, I've talked about that on the show quite a bit, so we don't have to talk about that part. But why in the world do they so hastily then add that it must be replaced? Why? How has that become the norm for Republicans who believe in free market principles?
I think it's really concerning what we've been hearing out of the House and the Senate over the past couple of days regarding the effort to repeal Obamacare. The plan up until now has been repeal first, and then let's have a national conversation. Let's have a debate over the various provisions that we need to replace it with, the fixes that we need to implement to create a patient-centered, market-based healthcare system in this country. But all of a sudden, you're absolutely right. I don't know if it's members getting cold feet. I don't know if it's members now worried that they have to actually vote the way that they've been campaigning and the way that they've been speaking for the past 7 years that's got them worrying. But this effort to replace first or to replace concurrent with or simultaneous with repeal is really concerning, because I think it's a recipe to not repeal.
Well, I think you're right. And also, my understanding is they're talking about keeping the taxes in place and saving it for their own little pet, Obamacare light. It really is pretty appalling. You know, James, I heard a briefing from someone in Washington about I don't know if you've heard this briefing, but it's about the picture is a catamaran traveling down a body of water and coming to a big fork. And because the drift of the political mouthpieces, the strongest voices, have gone so far to the left that what used to be the right has moved left also and is now calling the left right when it isn't. The right has never changed, but the alleged leaders of the right have moved to the left. And I think this Obamacare thing is a exhibit A of that taking place. Now, let me ask you, because you're a smart guy, if for some reason they should absolutely do away with Obamacare on January 20th, on the desk of President Donald Trump, he signs it, it's done with, what would happen to all those people that are currently insured under Obamacare? What would be the optimum thing that should happen there?
Right. Going back to the taxes issue, just briefly, I want to say that you're absolutely correct. When I was in the Senate back in 2009 and 2010, when we were debating Obamacare, when the Democrats were ramming it through, Harry Reid and Barack Obama were ramming this bill through without any opportunity for debate or any real opportunity for amendment, the Republicans consistently said it taxes too much and it spends too much and we've got to repeal the law once it passed. They didn't say it taxes too much for the spending that the Democrats wanted. They said it taxed too much. And so it seems to me it's a bit odd now that you're in a position to actually repeal those taxes that you may not want to, because that's not been the position for the past 7 years, right? Kellyanne Conway, the clip we heard earlier, is absolutely correct. A promise is a promise. And now is the time to repeal the law. No more excuses. With regard to what happens after we repeal Obamacare, what's the ideal solution? You know, back in 2015, I was the executive director of the Senate Steering Committee. I was working for Mike Lee, other members such as Jeff Sessions, who are on the Steering Committee, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio. These members were committed to getting as much of the law repealed through the reconciliation process as they could. And so they really fought to do just that. And the bill that ultimately passed included a 2-year transition period so that Congress could then come back once you wipe the slate clean with Obamacare and actually debate and replace this law, this disastrous law, with good, solid health care reform. And during that process, people aren't going to be kicked right off their insurance. There's going to be a process whereby they can eventually transition to whatever system the Congress ultimately can come up with. And so right now, it seems to me, because almost every Republican in the Senate and then in the House has voted for this law, that at the very least, that bill ought to be the floor, which repealed all of the tax increases and all of the subsidies and all of the spending and as much of it as it could get to. And then right after that law passes, then Congress ought to turn to a series of bills to reform health care. And I think one of the most concerning and troubling aspects of this law that may not be able to be addressed via reconciliation, we still don't know, are the insurance mandates, and specifically things like the contraception mandate. And if Congress isn't able to get to that via reconciliation, then I think they really need to start day one after repeal and start going through methodically these harmful regulations and really work legislatively to repeal them while the new Secretary of HHS, Tom Price, hopefully, once he's speedily confirmed, and the new administration can take every step that they can under the law to help alleviate the negative consequences of these regulations until Congress has a chance to repeal them as well.
You know, I would argue that there are so many negative consequences of the plan that's in place. There are so many people who are being harmed, James. And I don't let you do that. Okay, this is just my fantasy, maybe. I can't imagine that there'd be too much more harm if suddenly there was like a gap here where, you know, free markets came in and thought of ways. You know they do that. I think, I've said this on the air before. My husband and I go to Mayo Clinic every year. We're part of their executive health program. They give marvelous care. They have a system that is awe-inspiring. A group like that, turn them loose. Let them create something that's market-friendly for people. And they would do much better than Congress could ever think of. That's my position on it.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. And look, I mean, this is an important point that people who are arguing that we need to replace and repeal this law at the same time and we need to delay our efforts until we can do so, what they miss, which is Obamacare is crumbling. Our health care system in this country is crumbling. And the outcomes it's producing are unacceptable. And so it seems to me that if you allow that system to continue until there's some mythical day in the future where the Republican Party can come out from behind closed doors and say, we've arrived at the perfect plan, you're just going to get blamed completely and over again for all of these terrible things. But doubly so, because you made a promise going back for 7 years now, 8 years, to repeal this law the first chance you got.
James, we only have about a minute left, and you do a great job of holding Congress's feet to the fire, and I'm so grateful. By the way, the Daily Signal is the Daily Signal. It's a wonderful little piece of information that I recommend you all sign up for that will keep you informed of the latest. James, in this, you hear the music, so here we go. Do you think you're having impact in your conversations on Capitol Hill?
Look, our job is just to make sure that members of Congress, their staff, the American people, have all the information they need to make informed decisions. And I think all the information out there, all the logic in the world right now says there's only one way forward, and that is repeal this law first, and then let's begin the debates on how best to replace it.
Okay, I'm with you, totally. And James Wallner, Vice President of Heritage Foundation, one of the greatest contributors to our free system in the modern times, for sure. I have great respect for Heritage under the leadership of Senator DeMint. And James, I appreciate you joining me this morning, and hopefully we can have a conversation again soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning. Don't forget to pray for Senator Sessions this morning. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.